Hey, good morning. It's Dave Weiner here. I'm outside in the backyard of my house in the mountains. And so you may hear some birds chirping and actually you can hear an airplane way, way up there. Yeah, it's a nice spot. I thought I would do this outdoors. I always do it in my office in front of the computer, but the acoustics there suck. The acoustics here should be perfect because there are no walls for which the sound can bounce off of. And so it should actually sound pretty damn good. Almost like I'm in a room with lots of padding on the walls. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about today, well, first of all, this should be the first podcast in a new series of podcasts that I'm going to do that actually use where the feed only has podcasts in it, because that's what podcasting clients expect. You know, in the past, I've been saying, oh, well, I'll just throw a podcast on my blog and add an enclosure element to the item in the feed, and that any podcast client should figure that out. But I think we've waited long enough and they aren't going to figure it out. So subscribing to this in a podcast client should probably work pretty well. I want to talk about RSS and how the story of RSS is completely butchered on Wikipedia. And because all the journalists refer to Wikipedia as the authority on this stuff, they butcher it too. And they get all caught up in personalities and people and struggles. And they don't understand these theories of how it works bear no resemblance to the reality of how things like this work. So I'm going to try to do this really quickly without a lot of diversions. And because I tend to really get off topic quickly, I'm going to try to stay right on topic here. So here's what happened. In 1999, Netscape made a deal with, and I don't know any of the details of this deal, with four publications, Salon, Red Herring, Wired, and Motley Fool. And at the time, those were four leading publications. They were internet only. They were founded on the internet. So they were leading. They weren't print publications that were trying the internet half-hearted. They were entirely built on the internet, on the web. And between them, they came up with a format somehow. I imagine that Netscape probably did this. And it was called RSS 0.91. And they also put up a system, a server system called my.netscape.com. And I learned about this, I guess, about a month or 2 months before it actually came out, because I had been working in this area and they had been following what I was doing. And I started doing it in December of 1997, and which was about a year, give or take, before this all happened. But what I did went nowhere. There was one VC-backed content management company called Vignette. That was the name of the company. They did a experiment with my feed just as a proof of concept, I think, for one of their customers who wanted to see that they were doing something with XML, because XML was like really hot at that time. But other than that, nothing happened as far as I know. And but when I saw this, what they were doing, I jumped right onto it. I said, yeah, I got to be part of this. This is great. Because it had the basic ingredients of success. It had the backing of Netscape, and Netscape at the time was a very well-known and respected tech company. And it had content from those four publications. And what I represented was blogging. And so we had one of the leading blogging platforms at the time, or two of them actually. One of them was called Manila, the other was Radio Userland. We immediately adopted the RSS 091 format and supported it in my blog, which was Scripting News, scripting.com, and in all the blogs that people were using our software to create. It was quickly followed by the other blogging vendors at the time. The one I remember that moved first was Blogger. And so what you had at that point, and this was like in the spring into the summer of 1999, you had Netscape plus four publications, leading publications, and the bloggers all agreeing on a format. We also put up our own service called my.userland.com, which was quite different from the approach they used at Netscape. They sort of made it like the email style reader. Not quite, actually. If I can go into more detail, I have screenshots, I'm sure. We went with what I call the river of news approach. And it was great, but we used the same format. And this was a formula for success. It was successful in a moderate sort of way, because what happened then was Netscape was acquired by AOL, and everybody that was working on the project at Netscape, they disappeared. Not heard from again. And I heard from them a little bit later. Alex Cohen was one of the executives at Netscape, and we became friends. He and I see eye to eye on a lot of things. I immediately hit it off with him. And so they disappeared. And since I was sort of left as one of the very few people that were doing more than supporting it, I wanted to make sure that there was a spec out there that reflected the actual practice, what people were actually doing with the format. And so I wrote up, because there wasn't anything, and I wanted to see which. We had a really great database of all the feeds that were out there. A lot more feeds were coming on board all the time, and there were new publications, because these were leading, the four publications were just the beginning. So then a mail list started. There was an announcement from a group of developers that none of whom had products. That was the important thing. They didn't have blogs, they didn't have news websites, and they didn't have blogging systems or content management systems. They were just developers. And they were all organized by a guy named Dale Doherty at O'Reilly. And Rael Dornfest was the developer there. And one day they just came out with this format they called RSS 1.0. But it didn't have anything to do with RSS. It was, and I don't believe, their application wasn't content syndication. It wasn't news flow. It was something very different. Why was it called RSS? I have my theory. It doesn't matter. It didn't gain traction because the market had already been established around RSS 091. What can I say? They looked to me, and it got personal. They blamed me for the fact that their format wasn't being adopted. But I had no power over that. I mean, I suppose I could have adopted it myself, but there was no reason to do that. We had a format that worked. It was simple. And I don't know. What else are you going to say? They had some reasons why this format was better. I didn't understand them. Frankly, I don't think anybody understood them. I don't think even they understood them. It was just had some magic to it that was supposed to make something great happen. So they continued to do that for a while. And we continued to support RSS 091. We made a few changes, additions to it. Never broke compatibility. I know they say we did, but we didn't. We came up with 092. And then we did a deal with the New York Times. And I've written that up. You can find an example of that. If you can't find it, let me know, and I will be happy to provide you with a pointer. And this was based, they gave us a license to use, they had feeds. They weren't RSS. They were their own proprietary format that predates RSS. And it was a fine format. And I discovered it. Somebody leaked it to me. I don't even know who it was. Leaked me a pointer to this folder on the New York Times servers. And when I looked at it, I was going, oh my God, this is amazing. It had like the entire flow of the New York Times constantly up to date. This is how they did their syndication with their partners. And so I jumped on this, and they thought it was kind of clever what I had done. And they told me I had to stop, and I stopped. And then I had a meeting with Martin Nisenholtz, who is the CEO of New York Times Digital. He was in San Francisco, and we had dinner together. I asked him to do two things. I asked him for a license to the feeds, which they gave us. I also asked them to offer a blog to every person who's quoted in the New York Times, and they did not do that. The license was really up to us what to do with the feeds. There was no requirement that we share the feeds with anybody. They were doing the license to my company, Userland Software. I was the founder and CEO of the company. And at first, we just used their format. And this was in April of 2002. And you can find, you can go to my blog in that period. You'll find the press releases. I wrote blog posts, et cetera, about how cool it was that the New York Times was supporting. Well, now we had the New York Times stories going through my.userland. And Radio Userland got an aggregator in this period, so it was also feed reading. And then in June of 2002, a personal note, I got really sick. I was really sick this whole time, but the symptoms manifested in June. I was a heavy smoker, high stress, not getting enough, really not getting any exercise at all. And the stress, I can't emphasize enough. I was getting it from all angles because people blamed me for everything that was going wrong in blogs. And it wasn't fair, but fine, that's just what happens. We now know that about the web. We didn't know that at the time. Everybody sort of assumed that it must be my fault that everybody was so down on me, but no, I just made myself available for that. It was a mistake, but whatever. And it took me a few months to recuperate from that, and then when I came back, I left Userland, so I was on my own now, and I looked around for something interesting and fun to do, and I saw that the RSS 1.0 fork had gone absolutely nowhere, predictably, because none of the people understood the application and they didn't do anything to sell it to the blogging world or to the publishing world. Maybe they did, but it didn't result in anything. And here we were, we had the New York Times feeds. So what I did was we converted the New York Times. We created a bridge to the New York Times to RSS 091, and we started adding some features to it. I called it 094 or something. And then a bunch of developers said, why don't you just call this 2.0? And let's put that whole mess behind us. So I did. I expected the world to collapse around me and everybody to go absolutely apeshit, but they didn't. Turns out that, you know, everybody who had been sitting on the sidelines watching this thing, and as I got uninterested in fighting with these people anymore, and they were thinking, well, what is going to happen here? You know, we've got this sort of fork here. It's not compatible, and it creates all this confusion. And they said, Dave, you're the guy that can get rid of the confusion. So that's what I did, and it worked. RSS 2.0 came out in September of 2002, which is now about 22 years ago. Will be 22 years in September. I believe the date was September 18th. Again, this is all on my blog. And what happened when we had the New York Times supporting RSS 2.0 was the entire publishing industry came on board between 2002 and 2003. And the story, as far as the website is concerned, as far as Wikipedia is concerned, the story ends there. That somehow RSS just sort of drifted off, but the story did not end there.